Well, good morning.
Good morning.
On this Father's Day. I remember one of the stories about fatherhood that I heard early on in life and have struggled to maintain some consistency with that story. And since my son's here, he can testify whether that's true or not, I suppose. But it was a story of a father and a son who had to go leave the farm and go into town to go to a meeting. And as they were going in town, they got off the bus and they were walking. And as they were walking, the fire truck came and the son was saying, "Well, what is that? What is that?" He was all excited to see the fire truck, as one might be, I suppose, when one's a child, not knowing there's usually a disaster or a tragedy at the end of the rope there. But the father and the son said, let's go see. And the father says, "No, we have a meeting. We have something that we have to do. We have to go." And so they go up and they go around the next corner, and here comes the circus. And the little boy's going, "Oh, goody, let's go to the circus. Let's follow the circus." And the father says, "No, we have this to go to. We have something to do." And it has always stuck with me. There's something about the mature adult that no matter what the distractions are about us, we can see through the distractions and maintain our focus and maintain our task. And it's not for us as mature adults, as fathers, as mothers, to be distracted by the many things that go on in our culture. Because to be distracted means not accomplishing what we need to accomplish when we set out and make our plans in the morning of what we think about we need to do for who we are as persons. And when we get distracted, we lose track of that. And my guess is many of you can imagine times when you were distracted from what you needed to be about, and when you realized that you were distracted, that creates a problem in our own psyches, that somehow we lost track. Somehow we didn't accomplish our task. Somehow I lost track of what it meant or what it means to be a father, and if I'm not careful, that can happen. I don't know how many of you have read a book by Robert Bly called The Sibling Society. And in that book, he makes the case for the generation of men who are in their 80s now, that generation built this country, and that generation built corporations, and that generation built the mighty might of this country. But in building this country, and in building this powerful place in which we live, they abandoned their sons. They abandoned their children. They abandoned their families and worked 80 hours a week. And they left their families. They lost track of who they were as family members and as parents. And as a result, Robert Bly says in his book, The Sibling Society, that those children, in their anger, became bent on destroying the very country and the very powerful institutions that the fathers built. And when we get distracted from our responsibilities to those to whom we are responsible, and we abandon those people, those children, when they become adults, it has meaning and it has an effect on those people. And according to Robert Bly, they will set out to destroy the very things the generation before them had built. And I'm wondering, is that what we're seeing in our culture? Is there a destruction in our culture of what was once good? Is there a destruction because of the abandonment, because people lost track of parenting, lost track of their children? What it means to be a father is to stay on track, is to help us stay on track. Recently, we have been doing a sermon series trying to, in a way, parent ourselves as a spiritual community. And in Unitarian Universalism, there's difficulty in our spirituality because we are so diverse. And in our diversity, it's hard to find a central theme or a central myth. I was driving by, coming to church today, driving by a church, and noticing every Sunday when I drive by this church that there are thousands of people that attend this particular church. And I always wonder, what is the difference? You know, and I know that that church has a centralizing myth, a centralizing story, and I know the leadership in that church will not distract from that story and from those myths, and will reiterate the truths of that story in that myth to bind and hold those people together. So in a sense, that makes sense, parenting. But then I know that when we come to this church and in this particular sermon series, I'm saying just the opposite. I'm saying, how can we identify the beliefs that we have and then let them go? I'm saying, how can you identify the myth by which we live and then let it go? And I'm thinking, how do we have two churches and one teaches identifying the myth and hanging on to that worldview and hanging on to that myth and making it true to the point where if somebody attacks that myth, sometimes there's aggression over and against the people that attack it, or even the people that don't believe it. They are considered outsiders and not the same, and not the same benefits. And you come to a church in which I say, let's identify our worldviews. And as we identify our worldviews, I'm going to talk about a sermon called "There's a Crack in Everything, and That's How the Light Gets In." And how does all that make sense? And if you recall, I guess it was 3 weeks ago, we did a demonstration about how we hold worldviews in our minds, and about how a person has a worldview, and they may stand here, and in the worldview, they have a belief about society here, they have a belief about health care here, they have a belief about politics here, they have a belief about world war here, they have a belief about peace here, and they stand here, and all these things surround them. And that's how we put ourselves together, and that's how we hold ourselves together, and that's our worldview. And if you attack our worldview, sometimes we have feelings about if you attack our worldview. And I always bring up the example, probably because I grew up in Baltimore, which was at that point a very successful sports city. And if you would attack one of those sports teams, we would have been aggressive toward you. So part of my worldview was that defense. As a matter of fact, I remember an event in my family when I was a young boy, and the family was around watching the Baltimore Colts on TV, who were easily identifiable in blue and white. And as one, maybe it was Adam Meachy, I forget who, ran in for a touchdown, and all the men are cheering and all of that. And my mother says, which one are the Colts? Which one's the Baltimore? See, a crack in the system brings light, right? She had that streak in her, still does. And she's not here. But anyway. To take something about being human a step further in trying to understanding this worldview and why I think it's so important to understand when we talk about a spirituality of letting go and of backing up from who we are as persons, in a way disinhabiting ourselves in order to freely choose how we want to be. How we want to be in this world, why that is so difficult to do, and I think why people, when they claim a particular worldview, get defensive and are willing to go to war and are willing to fight for a particular worldview. We human beings have this odd thing, and it's other primates do it as well. What I mean by that is that, let's say that I'm using a stick to get some food to eat. Eventually, if I use that stick enough, my brain begins to believe that stick is part of myself. My brain starts to see that stick as part of me. And you may think, well, Gregory, that's kind of weird. But having been a carpenter, and carpenters have tool belts, and in Denver we had rig axes, and
you had your favorite rig axe. So I had a red-handled rig axe that had the wood. It was, you know, so you had to learn to be able to fix it because you broke it periodically. But that rig axe, when I pulled that rig axe out of my tool belt and would spin it around and snap nails with it, that rig axe was part of me. We give things like that names. We give our cars names. And don't talk about our car. We align ourselves with particular brands. And don't talk about that brand. They're teams. Our sense of self starts to include these objects. Not only that, I'm not that funny. Sometimes I am. I'm not that funny. Okay. Not only that, but here's where the worldview becomes important in this, that we will actually take belief systems, religious belief systems about ourselves, and we will make those belief systems part of ourselves. Michael. Thank you. We will make, isn't that from childhood to adulthood, a hard transition? It's just difficult. So, if I have a belief about God in a particular way, or about a country in a particular way, the human mind will make that belief system part of its own personality, part of itself. Now, here's the problem. And here's the problem spiritually, and I'll get to it in a minute, why and how I think it's a problem. When I do that, and I step out here, and I have that worldview and those belief systems surrounding me, I get cut off from part of myself. I get cut off from who I am as a human being when I say that I believe in love and I say that I believe in compassion, and yet at the same time my behavior does not indicate so. I'm cut off from part of myself. And it's because I'm surrounded by a set of belief systems and understanding of myself that somehow is incongruent with what it means to be spiritually human. If Eric Fromm, a sociologist, a psychologist of pretty eminent popular, teaches us that we will take stories and myths, and we humans have to make sense out of these stories and myths, and some of it will be true and some of it won't be true. And what won't be true, we'll start to believe it's true. Like if you see a tree, your mind will automatically look at the other side of that tree and envision what the other side of that tree is. And you're convinced that is what the other side of that tree is. And that's how we are with stories too. So we have at the same time the psychologists and the neuroscience pointing to these things that we try to make sense out of the world to make ourselves feel secure. But at the same time, we can take what is not true and use it to do that, to alienate us from one another. And again, surround ourselves. A Greek philosopher, 1,800 years before now, said this about what it means to be human, Plotinus. He said that the human being is made up, in essence, in three parts. The divine, and within the divine, there's a oneness. There's no sense of self. There's just light. And then we have the perfect nature, which has intelligence and form. And then we have the soul. And the soul engages the world. So we ask ourselves, can this soul get lost? Can the soul lose its way? And when I'm saying that there is a worldview that surrounds us, and we believe it is who we are, our soul can get lost. He also says something curious. He says that when we back up in and feel this divine sense about ourselves, that's where we feel compassion. That's where we experience love. And out of that compassion and out of that love,
comes into the way we think, comes into our soul, and then when we engage the world, that's what we see. Compassion and love. And as Unitarian Universalists, we don't always hear a conversation that our soul gets lost, and can our soul be saved, can our soul be found. But yet at the same time, usually we have a reaction to that because it's from the Christian world, but yet this understanding isn't from the Christian world at all. It's from the Greek world. Adopted by the Christian world and adopted also by Eastern philosophy. So we have this sense of worldview that we want to back up from, but we're afraid to back up from it, because if we back up from it, we feel insecure. We feel incomplete. We feel that meaning is lost. But at the same time, if we don't do that, we get captured by it. And I wonder how it is that Unitarian Universalists on any given Sunday morning have, across the country, 159,000 people in attendance in their church, while other groups have 15 million and millions. And I wonder, what does that mean for us as a people, that we have 159,000 and we come into a church and rather than claiming particular truths, we are involved in a process that says back up from particular truths. We know the signs of our souls being lost. On a personal level, the signs of our souls being lost are addictions, our sense of loneliness and the lack of intimacy while we are in relationships. A sense of being isolated. We know when our souls are lost. We also know when our soul is lost, the soul of our nation is lost. When our nation has war as a god or as a means of stabilizing an economic system. We know that when people are objectified for profit. We know that when pollution is legalized. We know that when there are those of us that don't have health insurance, when there's enough resources for health insurance, we know that the soul of our nation is lost. When the soul of our nation is lost, what do we do as individuals? When we have no sense of a larger concept of a found soul, of a soul of our nation expressing kindness and compassion seems to be empty, what do we do as individuals? Do we numb out? Do we hide? Do we go along with it? Do we affirm that our soul is lost by believing in the same value systems in which the nation's soul is lost? How do we break through that? How do we work with that? How many of us have a sense of loneliness and lack of intimacy in our lives while we're in relationships? How many of us have a deep sense of loneliness? How many of us would say, does my soul sing joy? How many of us have been wounded in our lives and we do not commit and celebrate life the same as we did when we were younger? We also know what it means when our soul is found. We know peace. We know content. We know comfort. We can wake up in the morning and we know that those who are the leaders of our land genuinely seek peace. Then the nation's soul is found. We know when our leaders genuinely seek the welfare of the whole, we know our soul has been found. I'm always plagued by the words of the author Paul, who wrote 13 books of 27 of the New Testament in the Christian sacred text, and he says, work out your salvation in fear and trembling. He doesn't say, you're going to be saved, you're going to be rescued, and it's going to be pure celebration. He says, work it out with fear and trembling. The only way I understand how to do that is to understand that I have a worldview, that I have an understanding of who I am as a person, that I have an understanding of my value system and how my mind works and putting those together. But yet, I'm to work out
my salvation. And yet there is light to come into my life, but I am to go find that crack in the worldview that I have. And am I willing to do that? If I find myself defending without mercy the worldview that I have, I am not willing to do that. If I find myself in the movement of being out here and talking with you and involved in life, the perfect mind, the intellect, reflecting about the meaning of life, and also moving back into that divine sense of who I am, where there is no sense of self and there is no form, there is only light, and I dissolve who I am as a human being into that light, and then I move back into reflection, into meaning making, and I move back into engaging the world, and I move back, and I move back, and I move in it, and I traverse, and I'm in motion in that three-part process, the three-part dance. I am not so prone with intensity to defend any particular worldview, because I know a worldview is an expression of trying to navigate in this culture and trying to navigate where I am in this land. And that's all it is. It is an attempt to navigate. And that I can back up and that I can let go of it. And the only way to fully understand the meaning of a particular worldview is to back up and to let go of it and to look at it and to analyze it. And when I step back into it, I can let go of some of it, and I can bring something else in, and new ideas in, and figure out other ways to express myself. And then I need to back up and let go of that, and re-enter that. And it's hard work. And it's hard work to do that in a nation that has lost its soul. It's hard to find a community that is really engaging and trying to find its soul, and then express love and compassion, when we're in a context that says, don't do that. Defend the worldview that you have. And then all the worldviews are competing in the middle of the country. And the next thing you know, there's violence in the middle of the country. And that people don't value that backing up. We will defend ourselves. As Unitarian Universalists, our central spiritual principle is about letting go of who we think we are. It is about letting go of the worldview that we have, so we can back up, and when we re-enter, be refreshed, be nourished, have new ideas, to be available for closeness and intimacy rather than defending an old worldview. That is our challenge.